So you say, I turn on an interaction, which infinitesimal means I have my whatever correlation functions I want to compute in the new theory. And I say that this, I just do the same calculation in the old theory. And then I add an interaction. This is a reasonable definition. We might have to be a bit careful when we have local operators insertions, because the interaction might have divergences near the operators. So here, if I really wanted to be careful, I would sort of integrate perhaps on, you know, on the whole space-time minus little balls at the positions of these other points. Of some radius. And then I perhaps would add some counter terms, like modifications of the actual operators. You know, and then making sure that the epsilon to zero limit is finite and good. Yeah.
Those are all x1 at x1.
Sorry. No, this I'm sort of.
Do they xi?
Yes, x1, x2, and whatever, you know, each operator is placed at some point. Mm-hmm. But let's ignore this. Let's just pretend I can write this. A standard way to deform a theory is to turn an interaction, and I think it's a commonly believed statement that this is pretty much the only way to deform a theory. Like every deformation of a quantum field theory can be written like that. And you know, intuitively, it's like, you know, quantum field theories are local, I'm trying to deform the theory everywhere, and I'm doing an infinitesimal deformation, so each I can just write it as a sum of individual modifications. It's like, to modify the theory everywhere, I just modify it one point at a time, which is what this is doing. Very good. So suppose now that I want to deform a CFT or a while invariant. Take your pick. QFT, depending on which perspective you like. Mm-hmm.
Can you form a QFT by putting the theory in a different space-time or by adding different boundary conditions?
I mean, to me, quantum field theory is a very local notion. That a quantum field theory is the same no matter where I put it. So a quantum field theory is a recipe to use this quantum field theory in every possible situation. So changing the manifolds I'm putting my quantum field theory on is not a modification of the quantum field theory. Quantum field theory is the recipe on how to put the quantum field theory in every manifold.
What about topological field theories? Don't they depend on the global structure of the manifold that they are?
No. The topological field theory is a purely local notion. This topological field theory can be placed on different manifolds to get different answers. But changing the manifold does not change the theory, it changes the answers.
Mm-hmm. But I am thinking, maybe this is wrong, but I was thinking like in inserting a defect, isn't that a deformation of the theory? And something like a boundary is a defect, isn't it?
Right, so those modifications happen in certain places in space-time, and you are not changing the theory in other places. So I would still consider them and in modifications, local modifications, adding defects to the theory. It's like there are other observables to the theory. It's like you're changing which observable of the theory you are considering. Now, most of this is semantics, but I think there is a notion that the quantum field theory is just the properties of your generic point in space-time. Now, all right, so how do I ensure that this modification preserves conformal symmetry or while invariance?
Mm-hmm. You impose the word identities in that part of the correlation function too?
Right, that's right. So you want this to still have the same symmetry, that's right. So for example, suppose I do a dilatation. Under which conditions this will transform the same way as this?
If I is
unbarred. I has to have scaling dimension D. Now let me specialize to 2D actually, for simplicity. 2D CFT. So I want this quantity to remain unchanged under local changes of complex coordinate changes. This changes by Jacobian, so this must change in the opposite way. So I z z bar the z squared should go to I prime, z prime should be the same as I prime, the z prime squared, which means that I z z bar is I prime, z prime, z prime, the z prime over the z squared. So this is a condition that is usually stated as saying that this is a primary field, primary operator. With scaling them holomorphic and holomorphic scaling dimensions equal to 1. So, to the former 2D CFT, you use a primary operator with dimensions 1, scaling dimensions 1, both holomorphic and anti-holomorphic. Now, I could give examples, perhaps, but I'm not sure I have enough time for that. So let me just move on and perhaps discuss extra examples momentarily. So I want to discuss how this primary condition maps to the state associated to this operator. So I'm going to claim the following facts, that the primary condition is equivalently stated as the fact that Ln kills I for n greater than 0, and the same for Ln bar, and that L0 of I equal to I, and L0 bar of I equal to I. Now, do you remember this condition from somewhere?
String spectrum?
Yeah. These are the same conditions for I tensor a ghost is a string, to be a string state. No, assuming C equal to 26. So I find this peculiar phenomenon that if I try to describe a string theory by taking some 2D CFT with this C equal to 26, like the theory of scalars that we were looking at, and computing stuff with it, the string states I find are precisely in correspondence with the formations of the 2D CFT. Infinitesimal deformations. Actually, I can even, there is something even better. So if you remember, we looked at this modulo stuff of the form L minus N on some J, which are the null states. So you could ask what happens if I take an interaction which has this form. So this corresponds to sort of taking your J, making an I as sort of Z to the N, D Z to the N J, roughly. Okay. Well, what happens if I deform a theory by a total derivative, by an interaction which is a total derivative? It doesn't change. That's right. So when I said here that interactions are the same as primaries of dimension one, I should have said, you know, but total derivatives do not deform the theory. So we are learning something interesting, that suppose I start with my free scalars, right? X mu, mu runs from 1 to 26, right? It's a 2D CFT, and it gives me a string theory in R25,1. And now I could try to sort of deform the CFT to something else with C equal to 26. And just use the same formalism meaning that I know I'm going to take correlation functions to these on these blobs. And I'm going to integrate them with the spatial complex structures of the blobs and produce something which I'll consider scattering amplitudes, like Feynman diagrams of some string theory, intuitively. So there is some kind of a space of string theories that I can get here, or perturbative string theories. Which is like this, which is the same as the space of CFTs with C equal to 26 that I can get by deforming this. And I'm learning that, you know, every small deformation, every tangent vector in this space of perturbative string theories is actually a string state, an excitation of my string theory. Now, if you think about this is really weird. Because, for example, suppose I'm studying electromagnetism. I can definitely deform electromagnetism by changing the mass of the electron or the coupling. I definitely don't expect to have sort of an excitation in my theory of electromagnetism for each way of deforming the theory. But in string theory, this is happening. And if we had time to sort of look at things more carefully and how to compute scattering amplitudes, this relation is really sharp, meaning if you ask, how does the scattering amplitude change when I move in the space of theories? Well, it changes precisely in the same way as if you had put a coherent state of these strings. Meaning if you had sort of changed your vacuum. It's like, if these were photons, if you had turned an electric field. Or if these were gravitons, if you had changed the metric. So all the ways of deforming your string theory can be realized perturbatively as turning on a background for some of the modes of the string, for some of the particles that you see in the string spectrum. And this is, really weird. I'm going to give you examples in a moment, but really interesting. So it means that all of the space of different looking theories really behave as they're just the expansion of the same theory around different vacua. So in a quantum field theory, there will be quite a difference between turning on an interaction and giving a VEV to a field. But in string theory, they're the same. So turning on a deformation is the same as giving a VEV to a field.
Mm-hmm. We know that what we land on after a deformation is a string theory. Like, is there a way that I can break?
Well, I'm defining for you string theories, but.
So all 2D CFTs of the world sheet.
Well, for any 2D CFT with C equal to 26, I can try to build a string theory.
I see.
Just treating in the same way as I would have treated this. Now, let's now give an example that might be more reasonable. Suppose I want to describe a string moving in non-trivial space-time. What can I do? Well, I could do something like this. I could take my Polyakov action. But instead of contracting with an eta mu nu, I can contract with the g mu nu of x. Okay. This would describe the motion of a string with a non-trivial metric. Now, this is not a free theory on the worksheet anymore. The calculations are going to be harder. Now, I have 26 scalar fields with a very strange action. This theory is naively while invariant, or conformal invariant, just because the same cancellation before that we had before between square root of h and h ab will happen here. But quantum mechanically is actually not while invariant. The stress of the tensor does not necessarily vanish here. There is a beta function. Now, we can compute the stress of the stress tensor at the leading order, at least. Meaning, we had this t that I'm going to write it as 1 over alpha prime. Alpha prime is like a loop counting parameter in this in this theory, which is not free, it's like an H bar. And I can try to do calculations perturbatively in alpha prime. And so the trace of the stress tensor, TAA, is computed by one loop diagram. And it's a very cute calculation, but I cannot. It's probably, I don't know if it's going to be in a tutorial or you can easily find lecture notes describing it. And the answer is proportional to dAx mu, dAx nu, r mu nu of x. But r is the, sorry, I should really say r of, so the Derici tensor computed out of g mu of x. So when is this theory going to be a CFT? Now there is going to be corrections, right? But let's forget about them for a moment. So when is this zero?
The manifold is Ricci flat.
That's right, when the manifold satisfies Einstein equations. So you find that the string theory can consistently be defined only on a manifold which satisfies Einstein's equations at the leading order. Furthermore, suppose that I want to do a small fluctuations of the metric. Okay, so that looks like the AX mu, the AX nu, delta G mu nu of X, right? Let's just expand in Fourier modes. Something like e to the I p dot x epsilon mu nu of p. Okay, so this is the interaction I need to add to deform the metric. Which state corresponds to this vertex operator? Well, it's the state, if you remember the state operator map. Again, I'm not going to go through all the details of the calculation, but it's this state with symmetrized mu and nu. And then some constraints, linearization of this. So this was what we identified as a graviton state. So we find that the graviton state indeed is the gives you the deformation reaction which deforms the metric.
How many different modes do we have? How many possible deformations?
Well, there's an infinite tower of string modes, right? This was particularly nice because it was massless. What are the things you mentioned in the spectrum? There was a tachyon that we hated, and then there was a graviton, an antisymmetric field, and a scalar. And the antisymmetric field I can describe easily. So you just do this. Maybe we should put an epsilon alpha beta, so it might be clear. This is actually the string analog of an integral of x dot mu a mu. Like, the same way as particles can be coupled to gauge fields with an index, strings are naturally coupled to gauge fields with two indices. And if I do an infinitesimal fluctuation of these, you reproduce something like that, but this is anti-symmetric. The scalar field is trickier to get a good grasp of. There are some unpleasant subtleties with how to write this for the state operator map for that particular state. But after the dust settles, it turns out that this the scalar field corrects the coupling, meaning it multiplies, if you change the dilaton, you're multiplying a loop diagram by the sort of e to the dilaton times the number of loops. So the scalar field changes the coupling of the string theory. So not just, so even the coupling that we put in the loop counting parameter of the string theory, it's a field. The tachyon, well, if you remember, the tachyon was just a state that looks like this, which means an operator looks like this. And if I superimpose a bunch of them, I'm just getting a function of x. So the tachyon gives you this coupling, like a potential of the for the scalar fields.
Why did you move
it? I mean, I'm just Fourier transforming delta g mu nu of x. And Fourier transforming in x. So Fourier transform writes any function of x as an exponential times a function of momentum integrated over momentum. Yes.
Why did you require antisymmetry for? Excuse me. Why did you require antisymmetry for the epsilon parameter?
No, this was symmetric. If we were to do the same for the B field, I would get an antisymmetric
One more question. If the first term of the trace of the 2D stress tensor
contains
the Ricci tensor of the background
metric,
and you said for it to be consistent, for the anomaly to go away, it has to satisfy Einstein's equations.
Yes.
But it can't satisfy Einstein's equations with matter, right? Because then I would still have an answer.
Oh, sorry. Here I was just analyzing these. If I start adding other stuff, the equations will, this will be modified by the Einstein equations for whatever you have, G, B, the dilaton, the tachyon, whatever. Actually, there is a very interesting feature of beta functions in 2D CFTs, that they are the gradient of something. So the beta function for, there is sort of a universal thing such that the beta function for any coupling G is the variation of that thing with respect to G. And so that behaves an effective action from which you get equations of motion.
So just to do a recap to make sure I understand. So we introduced these infinitesimal deformations to our QFT.
Yes.
And we concluded they have to have some scaling dimensions.
Yes.
And we studied also, what are the states associated to these local operators? They have to satisfy the equations that the strings, the spectrum has to satisfy, the states
have
to satisfy. So there's, so there's a correspondence between these deformations and the states of the string.
Okay.
So this is an example of that. So here we said if we have a background metric and you slightly deform the background metric, that's equivalent to adding to the action this operator.
Yes.
Which is equivalent to infinitesimally, it's like adding it to every, this is only an infinitesimal deformation, right?
Okay.
Okay, so if we add this to every correlation function, it will be the same.
Yes.
Okay. And this is associated with the state. So that means, does that mean that instead of the brackets having, we might as well put these states on the brackets, is that what it means also? Or no, is that pushing it?
No, what it means is that if I have some scattering amplitude with a certain number of legs, and I want to study its variation, right? Remember, the scattering amplitude was that, like this correlation function, I'm there integrated over stuff. This becomes the variation of it becomes a scattering amplitude with an extra leg where I put I. This is precisely how you would deform a scattering amplitude in quantum field theory. How in a quantum field theory a scattering amplitude would change if you turn on a background for a field. If I turn on an electric field in QED, well, now I have extra legs where any number of these electric field that I've inserted can be a source or a target. So somehow the formula for deforming a CFT, once you throw it into the machinery of string theory, spits out the formula on how to deform a scattering amplitude by turning on a VEV.
I understand the claim that in QED, for instance, when you turn on a backbone, you're adding an extra source to
Yes.
Diagrams. And now the surprise here, I understood it as now you can also interpret it as saying you put an extra state as a in the scattering and the amplitude, right?
That's literally the same, so it's not an interpretation.
Is the background? I didn't interpret the external leg in QED as a state. I wasn't interpreting it like that. Is it a state as well? When you have a background field.
Something.
Well, I wasn't associating with the state in my Hilbert space, but this deformation can somehow be associated with the state in my Hilbert space.
I'm not following.
I thought that was a surprise.
It's definitely a state in the single particle Hilbert space.
Like the Coulomb potential would be as?
If it's on shell, the Coulomb potential is not on shell. You're thinking about an actual source. I'm thinking about the background.
Okay.
Constant electric field is definitely a state of the photon.
Okay.
A single particle state of the photon where momentum is zero, energy is zero, and then polarization in some direction. Or any solution of the equations of motion is a possible background. And if an infinitesimal change in a solution of the equation of motion is a photon in some state.
Okay.
So there, I'm not saying anything mysterious, just a statement of the quantum field theory. There is no interpretation. It's just a statement. Scattering amplitudes, if I turn on a background, are like a sum of scattering amplitudes without the background, but with a certain number of external legs added. That's a statement of a quantum field theory.
Okay.
Now, the non-trivial fact is that I can take the formula for deforming the CFT. I throw it in the machinery that eats a CFT and spits a string theory, and I land on the formula for the deformation of an amplitude when I change the background. So the notion of interaction in the CFT gets converted into the notion of a background in string theory. And that is remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I find this very, very weird because deforming the CFT, the SUDI CFT, would correspond to, in some sense, it's a thing that we do on the world sheet. How does it possibly affect the entire manifold that the whole thing is embedded in?
So, when you turn an interaction to the world sheet, you change the way the world sheet moves in space-time.
But then at the same time, do I impose Einstein's equations or something like that?
If you want to be able to throw the CFT into the machinery that produces a string theory, yes, you do have to make sure that whatever deformation you've done preserves conformal symmetry. And so you would have to shift by a solution of the equations of motion. But this bizarre equation of motion would come from the beta functions. So you have to turn on you can only turn on an interaction which has a zero beta function. It's like, you know, in electromagnetism, right? Actually, suppose I'm studying a theory of electrons moving in a background U1 gauge field. It would definitely true that changing the background to the gauge field modifies the scattering amplitudes of the electrons by adding an external photon. But this external photon is just something, an artificial I'm using to describe the change. It was not an actual particle of the theory. It's just something I'm using to describe this change in the background gauge field. So suppose I have a theory of electrons, and they're coupled to the ground gauge field, which is not a dynamical field of my theory, it's just something I'm putting there by hand in the action. Then it's definitely true that scattering amplitude of the electrons change if I change the background gauge field by adding extra photons, like photon lines. But the magical thing of string theory is that these photons are always identical to some particles of the theory. So it's like I start with the theory of electrons, coupled to the ground gauge field, and magically I find that my theory of electrons is producing a photon. Yes.
I think that what I'm not understanding is in the electromagnetism example, the background is not dynamical. So
yes.
If I was thinking in the path integral, I wouldn't integrate that that field. So here we wrote some new.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like my question is.
I can answer the question, I think. So suppose now I have a theory of electrons, which are coupled both to a dynamical photon and to the ground gauge field. At the end of the story, you could have just said they're coupled to the sum of the two. You could have absorbed the background into a shift in the expectation value of your dynamical photon. So this is what's happening here. No matter what backgrounds I'm putting by hand, the theory automatically produces fields, effective fields, which enter the action as changes in the background. And so I can just absorb the background in the value, expectation value of these fields.
Mm-hmm. With regards to that, so yeah, because I didn't understand this part of the speech. So these are the new fields that when you introduce this information, you also have to introduce these fields, and then you can reinterpret the.
So these are the ground things.
Yeah, the G, yeah, capital G.
They are things I'm putting by hand. Now, the string theory has a spectrum that includes the whole tower of particles. I could give an effective description by having a field for each of these particles. I could build a field theory effective description of my string theory, which has a field for each of the particles. And then I'll discover that each of these fields enter the scattering amplitudes or enter every calculation as something that can be added to the original backgrounds. And so I can just unify the two.
Yeah. You reinterpret the background as a vector.
As a vector for the fields.
And is there, I haven't seen that done before, like is there any context where you introduce extra dynamical fields as a and as an effective way of incorporating this spectrum of particles, at least I have not conceptualized other things I've done like that.
I don't know. When I talk about QED, suppose I'm talking about electron. Have you ever said the word proton?
I think I might have, yeah.
Yes. And you might have written down even a Lagrangian where there is a field for the proton.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an effective description of the standard model at low energy. The standard model has these excitations called protons, and I can write a low energy effective description involving protons and an action for the protons and all of that. So the same way, if I have a string theory, but at low energy I find a bunch of particles, I can write down fields, a field theory that describes this at low energy.
Mm-hmm. And can you do it if the new excitations are massive? Because here I understand that all of these were massless.
Yes, you can. In principle, you can. Now, there is a bit of a annoyance in that if you include something that has mass 2, why wouldn't include something with mass 4 and 6 and 8? I had to pick some arbitrary cutoff, I guess, and include all the particles up to there. This is related to the fact that here these are modifications of the action with two derivatives. And we know we can do renormalization and things like that in a reasonably self-consistent way. But once you allow yourself to introduce operators with four derivatives, which will be one of the excited states of the string, well, then when you do renormalizations, all things mix up with all things. So your beta functions will become very complicated things, which depend on a very long tower of couplings, which is fine. It just you. Mm-hmm.
And they are not Einstein equations anymore?
Well, that's right. So you have an action which has these massless fields, the tachyon, and a whole bunch of massive fields. And you just write down the equations of motion for this action.
Mm-hmm. In the space of string theories over there,
yes.
The circle, is there another way of moving in that space that is not coupling to a background field like that?
None that we know. So this is a standard that string theory has no couplings. And perhaps I can use the last 10 minutes to give you another example of this phenomenon, because I wanted to mention at least this mention, D-brains. So you were asking a question about sources, like the Coulomb potential. Right. So how do you, in quantum field theory, how do you add a source to a scattering amplitude?
I usually think about it as a background potential for my A, some depth, or, yeah.
Suppose I want to do a Feynman diagram for electrons in QED, and I want to put a proton. How do I do that? Just one proton that is just sitting there, is very heavy, it's not moving, it's just Coulombing.
Okay.
What do I do?
The level of Feynman diagrams, I add an extra vertex and that
comes. Yeah, that's right. I add an extra vertex, which is attached to my diagram, and which leaves on my proton. Okay? So if I want to do something like that in string theory, it means I have my tubes going to infinity, right? But all this going to infinity, but I want to also have legs which end. And here I would really need to use a different color, I think. Right. So they end, and this is analogous to this. I mean, this is essentially white, whatever. There's really a variety of whites. This is orange. Oh, excellent. And it ends on some place. Okay? So that means my worksheet now has actual boundaries. So be very careful to distinguish between two notions of boundary conditions in a quantum field theory. So one notion, sometimes when you talk about a state, like the ground state, you would say that it places a boundary condition in the far past. But this is very different from saying my quantum field theory is born at some moment in time. And there are some boundary conditions. So this is a situation where in Euclidean time, the worksheet is just born. some very specific of your value of your local coordinate, say tau equal to zero. So you need to familiarize yourself with situations where quantum field theories start existing or only exist in a half of space-time or something like that. So these are called local boundaries. Here an example of local defects. So a quantum field theory is something that you can define on something that locally looks like flat space. A local boundary allows you to talk about quantum field theory in places that look like half a space. So a given quantum field theory can have a whole collection of boundary, of local boundaries. For example, here, when I say that a string's worksheet ends somewhere in space-time, that means that the scalar field that describes the position of the worksheet, some of the scalar fields, will have fixed values here. They call it the Dirichlet boundary condition. And actually, the coordinates parallel to this region will have another boundary condition, which is called Neumann boundary condition, where the transverse derivative of the field is set to zero. So there is a notion of QFT with local boundaries. Now you can ask, is there a notion of CFT or while invariant theory with local boundaries? Yes. If I think about while invariance, it just means I want my CFT in the presence of the boundary, my quantum field theory in the presence of the boundary to be invariant under while transformations. And if I like the CFT perspective, it means I want local parameterization, local changes of the holomorphic coordinate to not change the answers. And in particular, I want scale invariance and things like that. You can ask what's the condition for this to happen. So in the bulk, we want T mu mu equal to zero. This guarantees that the bulk theory is well invariant, but the local boundary condition might still mess you up. It turns out that the condition for the boundary to be well invariant is that the perpendicular parallel component of the stress tensor is zero. Holomorphic coordinates, something like T equal to T bar at the boundary. This is restricted to the boundary. Okay. And if this fails, there is a notion of boundary beta function, meaning the failure of a boundary condition to be conformal invariant when the bulk is conformal is expressed by a condition like T perpendicular parallel equal sum of some boundary beta functions, multiplying what? Multiplying operators which also live at the boundary. We're going to talk about the boundary value of the stress tensor. So here we encounter another notion which is probably unfamiliar, which is that in a quantum field theory with local boundaries, the questions you can ask at the boundary are different from the questions you can ask in the bulk. So there is a space of boundary local operators, which is nothing to do at all with a space of bulk local operators, and which depends on which boundary conditions you're looking at. So different boundary conditions will have different questions I can ask. So there is a space of boundary local operators, and the beta functions will be coefficient, which are like boundary interactions, if you want. Like if I want to keep the theory fixed, but I want to change the boundary condition, I can integrate on the boundary some coupling times an operator at the boundary. That will give a deformation of the boundary condition instead of a deformation of the theory. And so everything we said on this board keeps working, meaning there will be couplings which have to do with this boundary condition only, like the position of this yellow blob, the shape of this yellow blob. These are all couplings of the boundary condition. There will be beta functions which restrict these couplings and look like equations of motion of something. And when you try to figure out what that something is, you figure out that there are fields for some particles. And these particles are actually the states of the string of open strings. So once you start putting these boundaries on the worksheet, it's sort of natural to allow pieces of the boundary to go to infinity. These things that go to infinity like, now look like segments instead of looking like cycles. So then, you know, if you think about this as a proton, this is like some bound state between your electrons and the proton. And so you get these new degrees of freedom, these open strings. You know, they look like attached to your object. And so your object gains some particles attached to it, and the particles control the fluctuations of the object. So they become the fields for these particles are like the formations of the object. So you start by putting these rigid protons, or whatever they are, the ground radius sources. And the sources naturally become dynamical. And instead of being rigid and placed by hand, they become dynamical but heavy. And these are called D-brains.
Two questions. They are dynamical, but not in a perturbative way because you cannot get them to
right.
Do that.
So they are, it turns out that they have a mass or a weight or a tension or whatever else of the order 1 over the coupling, which means that they are heavy in perturbation theory, like a proton for QED. But at the same time, the fields that they source are small. Right, a problem of, see, in QED, I can introduce a proton, no problem, right? If I try to introduce a nucleus of charge 200 or a few thousands or something, I start encountering some troubles because in treating it in perturbation theory, because it sources a Coulomb field, which is of order 1, so I cannot do perturbation theory. So for if you have a theory of gravity and now you're looking at and you're putting by hand a source in there, now first of all, you cannot have infinite mass because it would back react infinitely. So when you do gravity, your sources always have to be sort of heavy, but not too. If you want to do perturbative gravity, you can put sources which are heavy so that you don't need to treat them as dynamical particles, but not too heavy, because otherwise they would source things of order 1. So this is the sort of things appear as D-brains.
Can you put something that sources brains?
Yes. Of course, in this perturbative setup, so this would be like saying I have an orange blob, and out of it, another orange blob comes out.
And it doesn't matter, like, which dimensions can these rings be?
It varies depending on the string theory.
But they are all, like, their weight or how heavy they are doesn't depend on the dimension, or it does?
It depends, but the overall scaling of 1 over G string is the same. Now, you could totally try to put to do something like a proton of a nucleus of very high charge, meaning you could take n copies of these d-brains. And then things would not be, some of the things would stop being perturbative. And you would have sources which are actually finite. And that leads to holography. Because in appropriate situations, you can argue that sort of the particles that live on the brains can still reproduce by their loops, which are not perturbative anymore. They can still reproduce these backgrounds. Now, a nice feature that while string theory in the bulk gives gravity or things like gravity, which are not quite quantum field theory, so we don't know how to think about it non-perturbatively. But the things that live on the brains themselves, they're quantum field theories. There's no graviton. There are gauge fields, not gravitons. And so you can sort of try to think about the situation where the bulk is still perturbative, but what's living on the brains is non-perturbative. And this is what leads to holography. The statement that this calculation is the same as having done calculation with some source. So you get this kind of open-closed duality where you can do the same thing in two ways, either putting a whole bunch of brains or not putting them, but putting a black hole or something like that. That is the back reaction of the brains. And the calculation should give you the same answer. And what Maldacena did was to sort of find a nice scaling limit where you could clean this statement as much as possible until it becomes a duality.